Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
Hello, lovelies. Selena here. I'm flying solo today. Vicky will be back next week with another amazing interview. We've been so lucky at the moment interviewing such wonderful authors of amazing books, and this week is no exception. I got to interview the wonderful Shiru Izzardi, author of The Kindness Method. The Kindness Method is all about how to change habits for good. It is honestly an incredible book. She has developed this whole method that at the core of it, the core of the message is that treating yourself kindly is the only way to make changes that last. And she's developed this method over the years through her own experiences, but also through years of working with the NHS and consulting and helping people through addiction treatment. And she talks a lot about that in her book, but she's also got an amazing story herself where she used this method to help herself after years of yo-yo dieting to shed over 8 stone and has managed to keep it off ever since. So it's absolutely fascinating how she approaches change, not with a kind of harsh, come on, you know, let's do it, let's sort of throw ourselves in, which I always associate with sort of helping yourself get over addictions, and instead brings this incredible approach of kindness to it, and it makes so much sense. And you can apply this to any change you want to make in your life. So I hope you enjoy this interview as much as I did. So first of all, Shiru, just huge congratulations on this amazing book. I really feel like you've written a classic. I feel like this will stand the test of time. It will grow bigger and bigger because as I was reading it, there were so many people I thought, oh my God, I want to pass this on to them. And I bet you hear that a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, I do actually. I do. It's astonishing how many people can think of someone who could really do with liking themselves more and giving themselves a bit more care.
Just to explain to people who haven't yet read it, what is the premise of The Kindness Method?
The Kindness Method is really just a collection of written exercises that I guide you through in the hope that I can help you build the self-esteem and self-belief you need to make lasting changes and change unwanted habits. Yeah. Because I think a lot of the time, those are the two main reasons that people don't stay changed, because they don't believe in their ability to, or they don't ultimately believe in how worthy they are of achieving really ambitious goals.
Yeah.
And so the kindness element a lot of the time is about redefining what kindness means in the context of habits. So a lot of us think that in those moments where we desperately want to engage in habits that relieve us in the short term, we think that kindness and comfort is allowing ourselves to succumb to urges and cravings. When what I've noticed is that people with the higher self-esteem, or who start from a place of higher self-esteem, tend to be able to associate kindness with long-term, more meaningful, sustained outcomes.
So it's about, well, you said this actually, I was listening to your amazing podcast with Ella and Matt, Deliciously Ella and Matt, her husband, which was such a good episode. I loved it. I loved them, how kind of deep they went into stuff. And
yeah, lovely.
It was a beautiful moment where you said, really what I do is I help people to like themselves.
Yeah.
And it that then obviously changes your own, the actions you want to take, the choices you want to make.
Yeah.
And that then in turn help you to make the changes you want to make from a place of compassion.
Totally.
And liking yourself rather than the place of, right, come on, let's do this. Which for me, which was so interesting, because I suppose, so I was reading this while both my partner and my father were going through a big health kick and both lost a lot of weight at the start of the year and really put themselves on, I'm going to say it was a strict diet, but it came from, they were just determined, and they having both of them have extraordinary willpower, the likes of which I absolutely do not have. So my thing has always been, well,
things like that, big changes like that to both their health. My dad then did couch to 5K. He ran a 5K run the other day and he was like, he's almost 70. He hasn't run for years. So all these things. But I was always of the kind of school of thought that to make those kinds of changes, it can only happen if you have strong willpower. Mm-hmm. And I don't. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't, you know, perhaps those big changes aren't so available to everyone unless you have that willpower, which is obviously one of the myths that you bust in the whole kindness method. So, yeah, how is your approach? How do you show people a totally different way to bring about change that isn't that kind of hardcore, right, let's do it and be really strict with yourself?
I think I observed the people who had willpower, if you will, through different areas of my work and in my personal life. And I noticed that they had a few things in common. One of them, for example, was that they expected the process to be difficult. They expected their motivation to waver. So rather than hope that it wouldn't get difficult, they prepared for the difficult and they assured themselves that they were capable of doing difficult things. The other thing is that they are very honest and in touch with their true motivators. So I often say, the example I very often use now in interviews is how when I was very, very overweight and wanting not to be, doctors would often remind me of the health implications of remaining overweight.
Yeah.
And although I wasn't proud of it, I can't tell you that that's what I cared about the most. Mm. What I cared about was things like pretty vain things, frankly. And it wasn't until I was okay with that, that I was able to demonstrate willpower, if you will, because moving away from bad things can kind of get you going from what I've noticed, but moving towards good things is what keeps you going. And that's what I needed to understand about willpower or resilience or strength or whatever you want to call it. And another thing too, I think, people who seem naturally motivated tend to be the kinds of people who appreciate that one habit leads on from another. So, for example, when you make one choice that makes you feel strong and resilient and positive, then you're inclined to make another one and another one and another one. And so this is why I think that if I could help people start from a place of feeling the way that someone with a lot of willpower feels and having the tools and resources that they have, internal and external, then they have a better chance at succeeding at achieving whatever goal they wish.
Yeah. What's brilliant in the book is that obviously you draw a lot upon your many years of helping people through addiction recovery. Is that how you say it? Addiction recovery?
Yeah. You know what? It's not actually that many years. Truth be told, it was really a matter of working in different capacities rather than working for many, many years. Mm-hmm. I worked with probation. I worked in criminal justice. I worked clinically and in the community and in homelessness and in private practice. And more than it being about, and as a consultant and a trainer to the NHS. So more than it being about years, if I'm honest, I was always a person, and I've kind of done this with the book too, where I kind of stuck around, picked up what I needed to pick up, and then got curious about something else. And really what the kindness method is a collection of many different sort of patterns that I've seen run through so many different groups of people until I could rest assured that I felt that they would be relevant to the general population, essentially.
So what was, and obviously there's also your own story in it of changing your habits and going through this extraordinary journey of eventually losing 8 stone, wasn't it?
Yeah.
By healing your overeating habits, I suppose.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing is too, I've lost more than 8 stone before, many times in my life.
Wow.
That was the whole, that's what I'd been putting my body through. And I certainly have the stretch marks to prove it, you know, but the issue was never knowing how to lose weight. When clients come to me, they know how to lose weight. We all know how to lose weight. The problem becomes finding a way to sustain it in a way that means you can enjoy your life. And I never found that until recently, until I did it in a way that seemed like I was being nice to myself, frankly.
Yeah. But was it your personal journey then that made you realize oh my God, kindness, being compassionate, being kind to yourself, liking yourself, that is the key. If we can take people to that, then making the change ends up being sustainable and is done in a way that is, yeah, healthy and long lasting. Was it your personal journey that got you that realization?
You know what? It was a collection of a lot of different things. Mm. For me personally, I wrote about it in the book. There was a moment when my counsellor at the time asked me what I would do if I never lost weight.
Mm.
How would your life look if you never lost weight? And I was absolutely vexed. I was really annoyed. I was really annoyed because throughout my life, that had been the ultimate. You know, when I lose weight, I'll date. When I lose weight, I'll be able to dress like this and go on holiday like this and feel like this and go out like this. And it was through that question that I had to come away from that session pretty annoyed. And
oh my God, you must have wanted to.
I was so annoyed. I cannot stress enough. I felt like she just didn't get me and hadn't been listening to me at all.
But I can imagine that, because if that's what you've been telling yourself, when I get there, that is what's going to make me happy. That is the answer to all of it. If you're then told, well, maybe you won't get there, I would be desperate.
Exactly. But the thing was, what I realized was that when I sat down and I thought about it and I thought about how I would behave if that was just off the table, it was never going to happen. I realized what I would do is start living my life again.
Mm.
I would do all those things and just see what happened.
Yeah.
And so I did that and I realized that my life was on hold big time. And turns out when you start behaving as though you're already a person who's worthy of care and consideration and compassion, then you start achieving your goals far more quickly. And that's what happened to me. And so I just started behaving as though either I'd lost all the weight already or I was never going to lose it anyway, but it was just off the table as a consideration. And then I looked at the rest of my life and thought, what else can I enjoy? What else do I deserve to enjoy regardless of, you know, the sight and the numbers on scales? And that for me was a huge, huge shift, because I know a lot of people who wait to achieve a goal before they think they deserve kindness. And I realized that if you give yourself unconditional kindness, regardless of your goals, then achieving them becomes far more effortless.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's so exciting. I just love this book so much, because I haven't read anything else like it. Obviously, we talk about self-love all the time, kindness and compassion, but I just love the way that you've gone into it. It's, you know, this is, because you give it to people like, right, you want to make a big change, read this book. But ultimately what it gets them to do is to, yeah, give them the kindness and love that they deserve. It's been missing all along. And now you'll find you can make the change. It's just,
it's a bit of a trick, really.
It is.
It's a bit of a trick. So what it is essentially is saying, here's a new,
tricking people into self-compassion. Brilliant. Yeah.
Here's a little sort of side door into mindfulness. And here's a little side door into self-love. And when you kind of mix them together, you're going to find changing habits much, much easier.
Yeah.
And we've known all of this. By the way, there's nothing new here. I don't profess to have created anything new. If anything, it was working in addiction treatment with people in long-term recovery from addiction. Mm. If you give this book to someone who's in long-term recovery from addiction, they'll tell you they could have written it themselves.
Yeah.
Or if you give it to any substance misuse worker, any probation worker, you know, these are tools that have been available to people for years and years and years. They're the most basic of motivational tools. And it was really when I noticed that and I started using them on myself and giving them to my friends and adapting them and stripping them down and making them as easy and jargon-free as possible that I realized we all need to know about this stuff. We should not be handing ourselves over to experts. We just need tools that draw out our own wisdom about ourselves. And that's going to be far more efficient. And that's what we do with strained resources when I'm working in the community.
Yeah.
So why can't we do it with, you know, a pretty quick book?
But that's what is brilliant, actually, is that so much of it is about getting to know yourself and your motivators and being honest with yourself. I know you say that a lot in the book. Mm-hmm. It's just like when you ask people why they want to make the change, whether it's drinking less or not using drugs or not overeating. What other kinds of changes actually would you say this helps people make?
Well, the things I help people with mostly, practically speaking, I mean, negative self-talk is a huge one.
Yeah.
So without the practical outcomes, if we have that,
yeah,
that also comes into achieving practical outcomes. But there are a lot of people who just come to me and say, I need to like myself more.
Yeah.
The dialogue that I have with myself is just cruel and is a horrible soundtrack to be walking around with. So that's
a lot of self-awareness, changed. Though, to even recognize that. Do you think for people to realize that the misery that they're suffering mainly because of what you call the inner bully, we call it the shitty committee.
Yeah, nice.
You know, that internal, that inner voice that's giving you a hard time. Because a lot of time people, I think, takes quite a lot of self-awareness to realize that.
If I'm honest, most of the time it comes as a result of being in contact with other people who don't treat themselves that way and realizing that there's an alternative.
Yeah.
When you've come out of a system, either a familial system or a friendship group where it's the norm, or you've attracted people who are like you. A lot of the time I'll have a message from someone who says, I've just started going out with someone and they seem to absolutely adore themselves.
I think maybe there's something wrong with me.
Yeah, exactly. the things that people come to me for. So previously, I have to say it was alcohol because of Marisa Bates' article in The Pool that really kicked all of this off.
Right.
So initially, people kind of thought that if they had a problematic relationship with alcohol, it had to get really, really, really bad until they just stopped.
Yeah.
Whereas I helped Marisa to create a plan, the same way I have a general eating plan that I sometimes choose to deviate from.
Yeah.
But I've learned that that's the best thing for me. And I helped her create a general drinking plan that she can sometimes choose to deviate from. But just a sort of a baseline that she has that she knows suits her, and helped her moderate her alcohol intake. And so for ages, it was mainly booze. But then as I started sharing more about my own weight loss and the fact that this time it was so much less about looking slim and so much more about actually liking myself and enjoying the journey as well as the destination, as opposed to neither, frankly, that people started coming to me to talk about either body positivity or weight loss or both.
Mm.
Then sugar. Talk a lot about sugar addiction.
Yes. It's a serious thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's something I've really started to notice amongst my friends, that we're talking a lot more about realizing quite how addicted we are to sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hard one to even recognize you are necessarily addicted to it and the symptoms of it, because I think we're so used to it.
Yeah.
So what have you seen are the symptoms of sugar addiction?
Well, I think withdrawal is something that people massively underestimate. So they'll just go cold turkey after binging on loads and loads of sugar.
Yeah.
And not expect to be in withdrawal. You know, people will feel like emotional and lash out. And
yes.
It's a real thing. Guys, it's a real thing. It's a drug.
Hello? Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's the same as that people don't. I've had clients who have overcome all sorts of problematic relationships with other drugs that we know to be more physically addictive, I guess. Who, you know, are brought to their knees when it comes to their relationship with food, especially sugar.
Yeah.
So I think we really underestimate that. We underestimate how normalized it is. We underestimate the fact that people don't take it seriously, when for other people it's incredibly serious. Mm. I see a lot of it. And actually, interestingly enough, so me having been overweight my whole life and not wanting to be, I always used to say, if I could eat everything I wanted in whatever quantities I wanted and be slim, then
I would be happy.
I would take that. Yeah.
Right.
Now knowing what I know, first of all, about how it actually makes my body feel to eat large quantities of food that has no nutritional value in it. I
mean,
I actually have some respect for how my day-to-day feels.
Yeah.
Which I didn't before. But the other thing is, one thing I can really relate to now, which a lot of my clients come to me, they are slim and, for all intents and purposes, healthy. It's the dependency element. It's the lack of control. It's the feeling like there's an autopilot behavior that is moving them in a direction they don't want to move in that bothers them the most. Or it's the shame and the guilt, or that they're doing something that they're hiding, even if the people around them don't need them to hide it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that it's that disconnect inside them that bothers them, which I can completely understand now. I didn't at the time, admittedly. But my goals were pretty basic back then. And what else do people come to me for? Tech is a big one now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, talk to me about that.
Tech. Codependency. The double blue tick on WhatsApp is changing people's worlds.
Do you know what? That doesn't bother me at all, but people do talk a lot about that.
Oh, yeah. It's a thing.
It's definitely
tech
a thing.
First thing in the morning, having some kind of morning routine that sets people up for the day. What else do I get? Procrastination is a big one. And
people come to you for procrastination?
Yeah.
Or it's really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, help me kick this habit.
The question is always whether or not they come to me, regardless of the habit that they come to me for. And there are many, many, many more. Some of them are so specific that if I told you, it would be too easy to work out who I'm talking about. The thing that it comes to is if you know how to do something and you really want to do it, but you're not doing it.
Yes.
Then I can help you with that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter to me what that thing is.
Exactly. You want to stop doing something.
Yeah. And there isn't any judgment there because when I was working in addiction treatment and we talked a lot about harm minimization and reducing the amount of illegal drugs that people were using, for example, there wasn't any judgment there. First of all, because anyone in addiction treatment knows that illegality, when we talk about that, I mean, alcohol is so problematic.
Yeah.
So that kind of comes out of the equation in terms of judgment or stigma, at least in health and social care, from what I've noticed. But the other thing is the same motivational tools are applicable regardless. If you know how to do it and you really want to do it, but you can't do it, then it's the why you can't do it bit that I help you with.
Yes, exactly. And that's what you get in the book.
Yeah. And usually the answer is because you don't think you can.
And it's because, and that's what I love about it, because as you go through it and it breaks it down and it sort of builds you up and it is so loving and supportive, which I think is just stands in such a juxtaposition to what I think we're used to getting when it's like, come on, you know, like charge through it, get through it, stick to it. It's so harsh and it's just so unexpected, the kindness method. And as you go through it, you start to really realize why, oh, hold on, this works, and with ease as well. So you don't, there's no, at no point you suddenly go, right, buckle in, let's charge through this. It's just like, get yourself prepared, get the tools, know your motivators, know the things that go. And then I think there's one part where you deliberately test yourself.
Yes. Yeah, so isn't there? You create the path of least resistance for yourself first and foremost, which I think is the problem. Is very often we start to make changes from a place of being really fed up with ourselves.
Yes.
And we think that we should just white knuckle it and we deserve to be punished and deprived.
Yes, exactly.
That is the path of most resistance.
But that's the path that feels so familiar. That's like, oh yeah, exactly. But that's how you make, you that's how you break habits.
Because
naughty you for having gone into that bad habit in the first place.
Yeah.
Whether it's sugar or alcohol or screen time or whatever it is.
But the problem tends to be that we underestimate or don't consider the fact that the habit that we're engaging in, even if it's unwanted, even if it's problematic, is serving a purpose. So when you remove it, you're putting yourself in a discomfort. You are changing the status quo and you may be taking away a pretty important coping strategy. And so that does not put you in a place of resilience that you need to be in when you're invariably met with challenge when you're changing habits. So punishing yourself is actually really counterproductive when it comes to demonstrating how you can push through cravings and urges, particularly in the first weeks, which usually is when we're most angry with ourselves and most fed up with ourselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, this whole idea of habit books, I've read all the habit change books and frankly, they're phenomenal. There are so many good habit change books. But I guess what I wanted to do when I wrote this one was to draw from evidence base without talking about evidence base. And to bring this idea of grit and resilience and mental strength into it, but only in a bid to demonstrate your own capacity to yourself in a transferable way that you can then use across every area of your life.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned earlier, I don't think that we should shy away from the difficult kinds of things that we don't think we can do. I think that we should intentionally plan to put ourselves in front of them, with the exception, of course, of harmful things towards ourselves or others. But I think, for example, if you think you're the kind of person who can't just have one drink after work and go home from the pub, then I suggest you set a mission to do that 50 times until you are the kind of person who can do it.
Oh, wow, I like it, yeah.
By the way, I'm not saying if you didn't go every night that now you should go to the pub every night. But you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I like doing what I want when I want. I don't want to feel like I need to go home and be like, oh, no. I can't handle that corner over there, and I can't handle this over. It just doesn't make me feel empowered, and it's not transferable then.
Yeah.
Then you're just learning how to deal with one habit in isolation, which is all good and well, but then what about when you want to change something else?
Mm.
What I want to do with the kindness method is give people a framework and a mindset that they can then apply 3 or 5 years down the line, because frankly, we're all going to have unwanted habits emerge throughout our lives. And having had a childhood of being taken to experts to tell me how to fix myself, I'm really against this whole idea that every time something pops up that we don't like, we need to hand ourselves over, by the way, at our most vulnerable, and hand money over to someone who doesn't know us as well as we know ourselves. Again, I'm not talking serious medical stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just talking, you want to change a few day-to-day habits. Sometimes, as a lot of people who've read the book and very kindly are feeding back now will tell you, sometimes it really is just an absence of having some basic tools and guidance.
Yes.
It's just completely. Very basic.
Yeah, but I think that it's so much of that because, you know, when you talk about resilience, it feels like the resilience you're talking about comes from knowing yourself and being equipped with the tools for those hard moments rather than being some kind of strong will-powered machine, which is again what I think I used to go to is like, well, that's what you have to be to make big difficult change. So just as you were talking, I was thinking, I bet there are, because I'm really looking at my energy levels and the tools that I use to help me de-stress and keep my energy up. And you're talking about sugar, and I'm thinking, caffeine, and I'm thinking, screen time, and all these little things that maybe are actually causing me my energy to drain and not helping me feel the way I want to feel. But how, I think in our modern world, there are so many things that are normalized, that are easy to become addicted to, that are bad habits because they're not making us feel good, but we don't necessarily realize. So for example, sugar. You know, so sugar being one, the amount of time we spend on screens and obsessing over Instagram and stuff like that. So if I were to come to you and say, I don't, maybe there are one or two habits like coffee, which I could probably do with dealing with at some point. Maybe I don't really want to though, now I think you're being honest. Yeah. But how do we... And you might not have the answers, but how do we identify sometimes the habits that aren't doing us good? Because we might not necessarily know, like sugar, like screen time. I'm just curious if you ever, when you're talking to your clients, they come in about, say, alcohol. But as you're talking about their life, you're like, whoa, you spend how long on social media?
No.
Like, does that ever come? Does that ever come up? Or the other habits start to rear up as being, this also perhaps isn't doing you much good?
Sometimes we, because what tends to be the issue when it comes to habits, unwanted habits, is that people haven't diversified their main go-to for as a coping strategy. So say, for example, your main go-to for an energy boost or boredom or avoiding stress or anxiety tends to be the same thing. And so I'm a real believer in that. You want to call them good or bad habits, the habits that make you feel better and the habits that you pay for, you know, or the line between use and abuse. I'm a believer that we can have a mixture of both.
Yeah.
And dip into what we like.
Mm.
I definitely engage in habits that are not healthy for me, whatever healthy means anymore. You know, apparently coconut. Anyway, I'm not going into that.
Don't get into coconut.
I'm just so confused. I'm just so confused. I'm scared to use the word healthy anymore. Yeah, I think it's just nice to have a mixture. You know, there are some nights when I will be stressed out and I will choose to meditate because the night before I was stressed out and I chose to have a cocktail.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really just, for me, it's just about balancing it and knowing that I will always engage in things that probably unbeknownst to me aren't great for me.
Yeah.
Who knows what we're going to find out we're doing wrong exactly. in 20 years. But I do think if I'm getting better at it, thing is, the way I do it is I use two main markers. One is, am I using this habit or this, am I engaging in this behavior to get into it or get out of it?
How do you mean?
Am I enjoying something more and enjoying this behavior?
Yes. Now I get it.
To be more present and to enjoy it.
Yes.
Or am I doing it to avoid from an uncomfortable thought or feeling?
Oh, this is very good.
That tends to be my kind of line. And I learned that from a client, actually, who I write about in the book, who went to Italy. And he changed so many of his habits by saying that he was going to drink like an Italian, whether it was coffee or wine, or eat like an Italian. And he just said he feels like they get into it.
Yeah.
You know,
they're enjoy
really tasting it and
yeah.
enjoying it. And if that's the case, then I'm up for it.
Rather than using it to
run away from something.
Yes.
Or distract.
Yes.
Or avoid.
Yeah.
That's one way that I tend to look at it. And the other way I tend to look at it is from a place of mastery and tolerance. So I'm definitely not going to get better at drinking. You know, my tolerance will increase. It will become less effective.
Mm.
And it's just not going to make my body feel great.
Yeah.
After 5 or 6 hours when it does feel great. and so I try and just keep a mixture, whereas exercise...
Yeah.
I get better at. There's a mastery involved.
Mm.
So I put that in my category of things that are, you know, I don't get better at eating cake. But cake's in there. So I just try and mix up things I get better at and things I don't get better at and try and keep that in mind. Like, you're engaging in this and that's fine, but you're never going to be really good at this or want to be, frankly. You don't want to be really good at this.
Watch this master at drinking cocktails and eating cake. I don't know.
Have you ever seen such talent? that's how I try and do it. I'm really into, I just, you know, my expectations of my body were so low to begin with.
Mm.
And my goals are getting more and more ambitious as I go.
Mm.
But I don't profess to be a picture of health, or I just want to be able to do what I want without it becoming problematic.
Yeah.
And that's all I want to help other people to do too, really.
Oh, you are such a wonderful voice of wisdom and relief in the world of perfectionism and just being too hard on yourself. I honestly think this book is a true classic.
Thank you so much.
I think it will last the test of time. I think it will become more and more popular as people spread it amongst their friends. I just think, it can only nourish and enrich your life reading it.
Thank you so much.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Even this conversation, it's like, I need to just look into my toolkit on how I energize myself, how I de-stress and just diversify a bit
just
more.
Just add more.
Add more.
Don't take stuff away. Just add more. And then anything you want to take away might actually naturally start slipping away because it doesn't fit into this new kind of framework that you've created.
Oh, this is so clever. And I have to say, I know you say you don't need to go and pay to see someone to help you make change. However, I'm a great one for investing in people to help me make change. So I think I know you've got an enormous waiting list, but it doesn't harm getting on it. If people want to find out more about how to work with you and other things that are coming up, where do they go?
Thank you. To my website, sharuizadi.com. And the thing is, I'm not saying don't get people who know more than you about an area to help you. I'm just saying, for example, I don't keep people on my books for ages and ages and ages.
Yes.
I just do one or two, or maximum three for the most part, sessions with people, just as long as it takes to hand over the tools and get them going.
Yeah.
And then I tap out on purpose.
You empower them, give them the tools. Yeah.
It's not the best business model. But I have to say, I didn't really think that one through. But I just want to hand it over Here's what I found out. It just so happens I geeked out on these books and happened to fall into this career, and I stumbled upon this information and it helped me do this.
So, oh, stop it. You really want... play yourself down. You are
no, but
absolutely. Look, you have, this is so smart, your method. Your
approach
is so loving and it's wise and it works. So thank you for the work that you do.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say best podcast ever. Thank you.